Welcome to the Rap Soul Podcast, where we dive deep into the world of music that moves our hearts and gets our feet tapping. This is the intersection of rap and soul music from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. We appreciate you for listening. Share this podcast with a friend or family member who loves music as much as you do. The podcast is hosted by 12 Kyle. Next up, the Rap Soul Podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Rap Soul Podcast. I am your host, 12 Kyle. I want to thank you again for tuning in and tapping into this podcast. The Rap Soul Podcast is a new venture by me, 12 Kyle. This is the intersection where we have discussions about rap, soul music, hip hop, and R&B from the 80s, 90s, and the 2000s. This is the best music podcast you've never heard until right now. Again, I want to thank you all for tuning in. Thanks for tapping in on YouTube as well. What I want to talk about on this episode is hip hop regions. As many of you know, or maybe you don't know, I am a huge hip hop fan. I've been listening to hip hop back before it was even called hip hop. It was actually called rap back in the early 80s. I go that far back with the genre. Not to say that I know everything, but I know quite a bit about the music. One of the things that I want to do on this episode is kind of educate those of you who are listening who may not know about how hip hop kind of came from its infancy into the regions and how we've actually moved into situations where there were regions that were once ignored by rap and hip hop that became staples, that became dominant, and that really ran rap for the better part of years and years and years. So let's go back to the beginning. For me, this is the era where I call the Genesis. As many of you know, or maybe you don't know, rap was started, or at least it was credited as being started, in August of 1973 by the legendary Kool Herc. Shout out to Kool Herc. He threw a party in the Bronx, the Boogie Down Bronx. And, it was at that party where they say that hip hop was born in 1973. At that time, I was like 8 months old. So I wasn't into rap or anything. I was a baby. But nonetheless, the genesis of rap, I think, started at that particular point. And rap started to be something that grew from block parties to basement parties to situations where you had a DJ. And he basically controlled the mic, and then eventually it went from a DJ to someone actually emceeing or rapping over beats. So I tend to think and say that the era from 1973 to 1979 was what we call the Genesis era. This is really the beginning of rap. During that time, obviously, if you're familiar with hip hop, you know that the Sugar Hill Gang made their debut, and they scored what would be the first big, quote unquote, big record as far as hip hop was concerned. The Sugar Hill Gang was, you know, not really known for spitting bars, but obviously their song hit the charts and became a phenomenon. But rap at the time still was relatively new. It was in its infancy. It was not even something that was considered a passing fad. It was just something that some people were doing in this small section of New York City, or actually a large section of New York City, but it was relatively small to the world and very, very still much regional. The next era of rap evolved into what we call the early days of hip hop. For me, I would say that would be between 1980 and 1983. Obviously, during that time, you heard songs like The Message from Grandmaster Flash and Melly Mel. in my opinion, probably the most important rap song ever made. It was a song that really captured what the essence of rap was at that particular time in New York City. And again, what was interesting was the music was coming out of New York City, the boroughs, the five boroughs in New York City. While I can honestly say that there was probably pockets of rap across the country, they were very much so regional and not really heard outside of those particular cities. But most of the music, in fact, just about all of the popular music was coming from New York City. Now, one thing that was interesting about the early days era of rap, because again, it wasn't called hip hop at the time. One of the great things about the early this particular time was, for me, I was then introduced to somewhere around the middle part or maybe the end of 1983. I was introduced to rap. And I, of course, I'd heard rap before. I'd heard Sugar Hill Gang. I'd heard Curtis Blow. I'd heard Grandmaster Flash and Melly Mel. So I was familiar with rap. But honestly, you're talking about, for me, a kid who grew up in a music household. It was Prince. It was Michael Jackson. It was the Commodores. It was Earth, Wind & Fire. It was Marvin Gaye. It was Stevie Wonder. It was all of these R&B groups. So rap was not even something that I was gravitating towards. And at this time, I'm probably around 10, almost 11 years old. I'm coming into my own as far as a musical kid, because again, music for me was constantly played around my house. My parents had bunches and bunches of records, and then they eventually started buying me records. But the early days era of rap, again, 1983 was when I was first introduced to Run DMC. And I'll be honest, Run DMC really changed everything for me as a fan, because Run DMC represented cool. There was nobody that seemed to be cooler, because, like, again, we didn't have the internet. This is 1983. I heard a song, it's called It's Like That. And on the B side, it was a song called Sucker MCs. And that changed everything for me. That was my real introduction to rap music. And I was hooked. And it was a situation where rap really became something that I gravitated towards. And it was something that I wanted to be a part of and listen to this music every day. Now, here's the interesting thing about it, because at this particular time, again, this is the early days era, rap was starting to bubble. It was starting to become a little bit more popular. There were, you know, outlets like MTV. BET was just coming on, but MTV did not play any rap videos. But lo and behold, through the streets, we found music, and the music made its way from New York City to my hometown of Florence, South Carolina. What was interesting was that if Run DMC came out in January and they put a tape out, it probably didn't make its way to South Carolina until maybe March or April. Like, the time frame was very, very slow. And I had friends in my neighborhood who had family in New York. I had family in New York, and what they would do is anytime someone would go to New York, they bring tapes back. And then the tapes would be like, I mean, like, we would treat the tapes as if they were gold, if you will. It was something that we passed around. We made tapes. And again, I'm 10, 11, 12 years old. Now, I'm at this point, I'm getting hooked on rap. And then we move into the next era, which what we call the rap era. This was like 1984 to maybe 86. This is when rap, as we know it, in my opinion, really explodes. Now, one thing that's interesting about the explosion of rap, because at this time you're introduced to acts like, again, Run DMC, LL Cool J, the Fat Boys, Curtis Blow, Salt and Pepper, Kid and Play. What was interesting about this particular time is that rap then become something that is being filtered throughout. Now it's no longer regional. It is popping up with popularity in other cities. Were there other rappers in other cities? I'm sure that they were, but I'll be honest, a lot of it we didn't hear because, again, there's no internet. So you either heard it on the radio or you heard it on the streets. And the streets and the neighborhoods and stuff like that, we just passed around tapes. And honestly, rap got to the point for me where it was something that I wanted to be a part of. It was something that I gravitated towards and I almost had to have every day. And what was very interesting about my mind at that particular time was, like, I was really in a position where I was hopeful that I would go to school one day and I would come home and rap would still be there. Because at this particular time, now you're starting to see rap in movies, and you see Crush Groove, and you see Beat Street and Breaking and Wild Style. And what people started to tell us was, oh, it's just a passing fad. That was the thing. People really brushed off the idea that rap could be something that you consider to be legitimate, a legitimate music art form. It wasn't getting any play on the radio, especially not where I lived. Now, maybe you started to hear a little bit bubbling, you know, late at night on the weekends in, you know, a major city like New York City. But even that, it was spotty. You could probably hear it on college campuses, but it was, again, something that was we were really trying to keep a hold of. But again, with the advent of breakdancing, rap was really packaged and really brushed off as if it was going to be something that was a fad. It was going to come like breaking, and then it was going to go away, because breaking pretty much came and went as far as the masses were concerned. Obviously, pop locking and b-boying and graffiti, that has always been an element in hip hop. But for the masses, we were told that rap, this rap crap, wasn't going to be around long. So at this point, we're in the rap era, and this is, again, 84 to 86. And then the next era is what personally I call the golden era of hip hop. This era was tremendous in so many different levels. This era, in my opinion, spanned from 1987 to 1997. That's a 10-year span, and so many things happened. You had not only the explosion of rap across the country, but different regions, and how rap started to get to us in the masses, and how we supported it, and how we purchased it, and then how it reached the suburbs. Because by this time, in that time frame, it was no longer a street thing. It wasn't something that was just shared by black kids. It was white kids in Iowa who were tapping into the music. And so the golden era is an era in which I think that we saw just about any and everything happen. And it was for the good and the bad of the genre. Now it's time for a commercial break. So sit tight. On the other side of the break, I'll tell you a little bit more about the golden era and the subsequent eras after that, and why these regions came and became what they were. Sit tight. We'll be back in just a second. If you want a podcast where culture, conversation, and life collide, where you get insightful commentary, engaging discussions, and a fresh perspective on everything, then you need to listen to the 12 Kyle podcast, hosted by the one and only, yours truly, 12 Kyle, a voice that you know and trust. This podcast will bring you thought-provoking moments, compelling stories, and a whole lot of fun. Whether you're a first-time listener or just tuning in, each episode promises to be something new and exciting. So sit back, relax, join 12 Kyle, myself, and my guests as we break down the world around us and give you stories that you've never heard before, from nostalgic throwbacks to everything in between. The 12 Kyle podcast is a front row seat to this conversation. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of the 12 Kyle podcast, where the vibe is always real and the discussion is always worth your time. Are you feeling nostalgic for the golden eras of rap and soul music? If so, tune in to the Rap Soul Podcast. We are your weekly journey through the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, spotlighting the music and the hidden gems that shaped the soundtrack of our lives. From the powerful beats to the soulful melodies, we bring you the best of the past with fresh insights and stories. Rediscover the music that defined a generation. Subscribe to the Rap Soul Podcast and enjoy the vibes. And just like that, we are back. Once again, it's your boy 12 Kyle. This is the Rap Soul Podcast. Again, I want to thank you all for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe. If you haven't done so already, download, subscribe on all streaming platforms as well as YouTube. Before the break, I told you a little bit about the golden era of hip hop. And then it was during this time in the golden era between 87 and 97, a lot happened. And really, to break it down, you really have to take this 10-year period and maybe break it almost into 3-year increments, because you started to see different shifts. And probably what I'll do is I'll probably have more episodes that focus on not only just hip hop regions, but how these time frames shifted and molded into what we now know as hip hop. But it was during this time where you saw obviously years of emceeing change, the genre of music change. It began to become something that where the masses begin to realize that this is a legitimate music art form being recognized at the Grammys. And then you had an explosion of music and sounds and artists from just about every different pocket of the country. It was then where you really started to see artists come from a little bit of everywhere. So you may have an artist like Sir Mix-a-Lot from Seattle. And then you had, you know, the Bay. You had artists from like Too Short. And then, of course, on the West Coast of what we call L.A., N.W.A. That explosion in 1988, Eazy-E, all of those artists, Ice-T, King T, so many of them, Above the Law, Compton's Most Wanted, those artists grew. And then you moved it a little bit further to the South, to Houston in particular. You had artists like the Ghetto Boys, and then subsequently UGK as you moved and moved a little bit into the 90s. Then you move up to areas like Atlanta. You went from artists, from local artists like Raheem the Dream and Kilo Ali, to ultimately artists like Jermaine Dupri, Outkast, T.I., so forth and so on, as it expanded in the South. Then you had Memphis. You had artists like 8-Ball and MJG, 3-6 Mafia. And then you obviously take it even further south to Miami. You had artists, obviously, in the late 80s, like Uncle Luke and the 2 Live Crew. And you just saw that expand to groups like Poison Clan. And then ultimately other artists like, you know, of course, more contemporary, like artists like Rick Ross, Trick Daddy, Trina, like artists like that. And then obviously in the North, as far as like New York City, you had a huge explosion of MCs, and the MCs really became really a fabric of what you thought that hip hop probably could be. Any artists from like Eric B and Rakim to LL Cool J to Slick Rick. And then as you moved into the 90s, artists like, you know, Naughty by Nature in New Jersey, Redman in New Jersey, Brand Nubian, the list goes on and on. Public Enemy in the 80s into the 90s. And then as you move further along, as far as the MCs, things changed as far as what they were talking about, the subject matter. You had MCs like Nas, Biggie, Jay-Z, Wu-Tang, the list goes on and on and on. You had labels like Bad Boy and Death Row. And so all of these things are exploding. And like I said, if I had more time, I would explain and break it down probably into 3-year increments. And again, I may come back and do another episode on this, because you really, those years even if you take like from 87 to 89, so much happened in hip hop in that particular time that molded and shaped how the music and the genre sounded. And then it sounded even more different from 1990 to 93, and then from 93 to 95, and 95 to 97, so forth and so on. So what I'm saying is that the music constantly was changing. The artist was constantly changing. And what happened was that it was a situation where the music just continued to grow. And again, it became a legitimate art form. And for hip hop and for fans like me, it was very interesting. And what made it interesting was because, again, you see the title, Hip Hop Regions. So there was no regions that I had any particular allegiance to. Again, I was a kid who grew up in Florence, South Carolina. I grew up, again, on Run DMC, LL Cool J, Eric B and Rakim, so forth and so on. So my first artists that I gravitated towards were the artists from the early era, and the early days of hip hop and the early rap era. And they were obviously artists from New York. Now, interesting thing happened after that, because as you move into 87, 88, I was then introduced to Eazy-E and the Posse, and then NWA subsequently. And, you know, artists like 7A3. And then there became this influx of West Coast artists that I gravitated towards, and the music just was incredible to me. But again, because I was from the South, I had a different appreciation for all of the music. There was nothing that tied me to the music from New York City. There was nothing that tied me to the music from LA. And then what became even more interesting was hearing acts like 2 Live Crew. While 2 Live Crew weren't considered to be, you know, any type of MCs, but they were Southern rap. But here's the thing. New York had a stranglehold on how and what hip hop looked like and what it sounded like. And New Yorkers, for the most part, not all, but most, really didn't take kind to anybody's sound, anybody outside of New York. And that includes Philadelphia or DC or Virginia. Anything outside of New York, a lot of people in New York considered it to be country. So in essence, in a lot of ways, at that particular time, hip hop was really being gatekept by MCs and fans of rap music from New York. And New York had rap pretty much solely to itself from its infancy all the way up through probably the mid 90s. And there was a shift. There was a shift because obviously as regions started to bubble, you had more interest in the music, particularly for people who lived in those regions. So here's the thing. If you lived in Compton, yeah, you were going to gravitate toward NWA because they were talking about things that you were familiar with, and they would talk about streets and neighborhoods and sets that you were familiar with. And so that became your soundtrack. No different from, you know, anybody from Brooklyn talking about their hood in Brooklyn, and the music was for, it wasn't necessarily for people from Brooklyn, but it was their way of communicating through the music to their hoods. And subsequently, the same happened in the South, in the Midwest, in Chicago, for instance. And there was a trickle down effect. And ultimately, the regions became what they became, and the regions got bigger and bigger and stronger over a period of time. And what happened was that New York quickly realized that they no longer had a tight grip on rap at the time. In fact, the grip was lost. By the time the West Coast, or LA, if you will, or for lack of a better term, Death Row, came through in the early 90s with the G-Funk sound with Dr. Dre, it changed everything, because now you had a seismic shift, and now you had people that were gravitating and running to this music, and the music didn't look like New York City. It didn't sound like Brooklyn. It didn't sound like the Bronx. It didn't sound like anything that we had heard up until this point. And there were a lot of people from New York, hip hoppers, who resented the music from LA. And it wasn't because the music was bad. It's just that it wasn't New York. And one of the things that people aren't honest about hip hop is that New Yorkers, a lot of them at that particular time, didn't like any music that wasn't from New York. And that became problematic over a period of time. But most fans gravitated to the music that was dope. And so if you were from LA and you were dope, people rock with it. If you were from New York and it was dope, or if you were from Chicago, it was dope. And so it became not as regional as it had been in years past. And for some, it was, the transition was easy. For others, they had a really big problem with music being popular that didn't look and feel and sound like the music they were used to. And so subsequently, as the years moved on, so we go from the golden era into what I call the platinum era, from 1998 to like 2003. And that music changed and shifted even more, because now hip hop is making money, right? It is, hip hop is a $1 billion industry at this point. And hip hop is being used to sell any and everything. And it was about the culture, and it was about how much money you made. And it wasn't like how it was in 1988, where if you made money, like, you know, artists that came out in 1988, they weren't really necessarily trying to make money. They just wanted to get, they wanted to get a record deal, and they wanted to be heard on the radio. And maybe if they shot a video, for their video to be played. But by the time the mid 90s hit and rappers were getting money and seeing millions of dollars, then it became something like, wait a minute, we can make a living off this. We don't have to be, you know, these rappers just for a couple of years. We can take this money and we can branch off, and we can do movies, and we can do TV, and we can sell product, and we can do all of this stuff. And what advertisers and people found out was that there was also a level of comfort in knowing that you could sell to your particular regions of hip hop. And as the time went on, those regions got bigger and bigger and bigger, to the point where you had artists, you know, and I'll just use the South as an example. You had artists from the South that said, look, we're going to make music for Atlanta, or we're going to make music for the South. And that's all we're going to do. And if New York likes it, cool. If they don't like it, to hell with them. And we saw artists from LA say, hey, we're going to make music for us. We're going to make our kind of music. It's going to be gangster music. It's going to have a swing to it. It's going to have a bop to it. It's going to have these graphic tales about the neighborhoods that we grew up in, the gangs and stuff that we had to deal with. And it's going to look and feel a certain way. And if you like it, cool. But if you don't like it, that's fine too. We don't even care. And you saw a shift. You saw a shift from New York to LA. And LA had a run. And then you saw a shift. Obviously, the quote unquote East Coast, West Coast beef. And I really don't even like calling it that, because it really wasn't that. But you saw a power struggle. You saw a power dynamic, a tug of war, if you will, between both coasts of music and regions of music. And then suddenly you saw something bubbling in the South, particularly in Atlanta and Miami and Memphis. And you saw a bunch of MCs, and at least for me in particular, being a kid from the South, I saw guys like Outkast that look like me, and they dress like me, and they walk like me, and they talk like me. And soon everybody that was around me was gravitating toward that music, and it didn't matter where you were from. And it was like, okay, well, we're not worried about being excluded from New York City, because New York doesn't have to care. We can just make music to cater to our fans in this particular area, in this region. And you saw that happen in Texas, and you saw it with like screw music, where in a place like Houston, where that was a subgenre of hip hop that like for me personally, I couldn't get into screw music. But the thing about it was that it was just for that particular area, and the music did well. You saw areas like New Orleans with No Limit and Cash Money come and navigate a sound for the South, and it was made for the South. But then the West Coast picked it up, the East Coast picked it up, New York picked it up, and everybody took to it. And then you saw these artists like, you know, Eminem and Kanye West and Common come from the Midwest, and they had a different sound and a different verbiage and different slang, and people, you know, gravitated toward that music. And so slowly but surely, the regions really just blew. And it was really about growing the music. And ultimately, a lot of people who are natives of New York or rap fans from that era of music, a lot of them felt left out. And you can't really blame them, but you can, because for a lot of them, they did not respect the music that was being made, right? So if you thought everything outside of New York was country, you were never going to pay attention to NWA. You were never going to pay attention to Nipsey Hussle. You were never going to pay attention to Tupac. You were never going to pay attention to any of that music because it didn't sound like the Lox. It didn't sound like Brand Nubian. It didn't sound like Redman. It didn't sound like Wu-Tang. It didn't sound like Fat Joe. And so New York, East Coast, if you will, got squeezed out of a lot of years as far as that particular region. And it wasn't like they weren't making good music, because I can tell you that New York never stopped making bad music. I mean, never stopped making good music, but it stopped appealing to the masses when the music got so big. And New York, how can I put this? Not grouping everybody, but a lot of people from New York and rap fans in that area, they were really particular about their particular artists. And so it was almost like, okay, I like Jay-Z. I don't care for Nas. I don't care for Wu-Tang. And they were stuck on their particular artists. And those artists really could bubble and have success, but those artists really weren't working together. And we saw a lot of this towards the back end of the golden era into the platinum era, wherein the artists in the South, and that was the one reason why the South really blew up the way that it did, was that you could go to a video shoot in Atlanta, right? There could be a video shoot for T.I. shooting a video. And in the video shoot, you'd see Ludacris, you'd see Jeezy, you'd see Goody Mob, you'd see Outkast, you would see all of these artists, even some lesser known artists there at the video shoot, probably popping in, and everybody was showing love. And there was no beef, and they seemed to get along. And they said, well, it looked from the outside looking in like these artists said, hey, you know what? Let's get money together. And that's what they did. And they stuck together, and the movement from the South pushed and pushed and pushed. We saw the same thing happen out West. Now, out West was a little bit different because obviously you have different territories, particularly if you're talking about L.A. because of the gang culture. But the thing about it was that even at a place like Death Row, where you had Bloods and Crips, different hoods, different sets, everybody still said, well, look, we're going to put this gang stuff aside and we're going to get money. So you can say what you want about Suge Knight and how he ran Death Row, but at the end of the day, they helped create a movement, and that West Coast sound was totally different from anything else that we've heard. And subsequently, as you've seen the years go on, you still see a unification. And we've seen it here recently with Kendrick Lamar. You've seen a unification of West Coast artists, and they are riding a wave that is tremendous right now, and rightfully so, because it's still good music. And it's not to say that there isn't good music coming from New York. It's just different in how they handle it. And I think for a long time, the regency, the region's bias of the East Coast or New York in particular, it was palpable in the community of hip hop. And, you know, if you're from New York and you're listening, and if you think I'm wrong, I'm definitely open to have a discussion about it. I don't think I am. But like, there was a particular time in the 90s where as the South started to bubble and as the West was really, really picking up steam, New York kind of turned their shoulder and said, well, hey, we're New York. We don't care about, you know, low riders and 6'4s, and we don't care about this. We don't care about that country talk. We don't care about your lemonade. We don't care about your sweet tea or whatever you rapping about. It's about Tim's and hoodies and, you know, and all of this other stuff that was identifiable with New York. But what was interesting was that over this period of time, the genre still grew, and it grew at a tremendous rate. And it has become a lot of what we see today. And what's interesting is, even today, you can still see some bias. You can see some West Coast bias. You can see some East Coast bias. I have in this whole beef, if you will, between Kendrick Lamar and Drake, I've seen a lot of well-known people who I didn't think probably had any, or at least should have a reason to have a particular bias against the West, really come out and, you know, really try to crap on Kendrick Lamar and the movement that he had as far as like his beef with Drake. And Kendrick addressed it in his song. He said, you know, a lot of people don't like the West Coast and I'm cool with it. And I think that line flew over a lot of people's head because like Kendrick really was stating what was the obvious is that you don't really care about Drake. You don't like me or my music, or you don't like my coast and my music. You don't like LA and its music. But you know what? You have to deal with it. And I think New York has fallen behind. If you had to gauge which region really is moving things as far as rap is concerned or hip hop is concerned, I mean, it's the South and the West. And it's been that way probably, at least for the South, probably the better part of the last 15, maybe 20 years. And right now, the West is right on the South's heels, in my opinion. New York, it's been a while. It's been a long time. What can get New York back to where it was? I don't know. I mean, at this point, because there are a lot of fans that are still stuck in that mentality. And that's cool. Again, like what you like. I don't want to sound as if like you should have certain biases or liking someone, you know, based on where they're from or anything like that. I have an interesting perspective, again, because one, I was there from hip hop's infancy. And then two, because of where I grew up and because of how I grew up, there was no regions to claim. It was just Eric B and Rakim. It was just Big Daddy Kane. It was just MC Light. It was just Cool Moe Dee. And then it became Eazy-E. It became NWA. It became Ice Cube. It became Dr. Dre. And then it became Wu-Tang. And then it became Outkast and Tribe Called Quest and so forth and so on. And so for me, growing up in South Carolina, there was no bias because like we loved it all. And so like it's interesting because I've talked about on this podcast my love for West Coast music, West Coast hip hop in particular. And I had someone reach out to me who heard the podcast and it was like, wow, I didn't realize that you know, knew so much about and was so into, because I, you know what it was? I mentioned Nipsey Hussle and I spoke at length on one of the episodes, one of the previous episodes about my love for Nipsey and his music and how I really have, you know, gotten into his music even more so in over these last few years. And they were surprised. And I was like, well, what's the surprise? It was like, I didn't know you were into West Coast hip hop like that. And I just like shit that's dope. I mean, like, we always had the old saying, it's not where you're from, it's where you at. And so for me, I really take that to heart because music is music and it's dope. One of the things that I wanted to convey in this particular episode is that the regions are the regions. And it's not one region I think that's any better than the other. Personally, I can listen to Common from Chicago. I don't listen to Kanye anymore, but I could listen to Kanye if I wanted to, just like I could listen to, you know, Bun B, or I could listen to, you know, 8-Ball and MJG. My musical taste, if you haven't noticed by now, is pretty much everywhere. I love who I love. I like who I like. And if you got dope shit, I'm going to listen to it. And I've always been like that. And I'm still going to take it back to Run DMC. I'm still going to take it back to Kool Moe Dee. I'm still going to take it back to LL. I'm still going to take it back to the music that birthed me, if you will. But I'm also going to give you and listen to the stuff that I thought was dope as I got older. And music is music. And one of the things, one of the great things about the hip hop regions is that the regions still represent. I mean, I don't think that New York's any, I don't think that it's whack or anything like that, or that it's producing bad MCs. But I think New York has a ways to go. I think the South can shore up what they're doing. And I think they still have a ways to go. I think the West Coast right now is on flames right now. And they can make it better even as they're going along. And as the regions get stronger, hip hop gets stronger. But ultimately, what I want to convey in this episode is just to understand that there's still regions. And honestly, there's still people, rap fans, who don't like different regions of music. I know some people who are New York City people, and they are like born and raised in New York. And I got friends like this who were born and raised in New York, and like they'll never listen to Outkast. They just won't. And I have friends who are, you know, from Atlanta who won't ever listen to a Dipset album, you know, or the Lox. They just, it's just not for them. And that's cool. You know, it's okay to have biases, but understands that the regions really are what make hip hop what they are. And at the end of the day, if you're a fan, just be a fan. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for me. This has been another edition of the Rap Soul Podcast. Again, I want to thank you all for tapping into the Rap Soul Podcast. Remember, this podcast drops every Monday at midnight. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Pass the word. You can find Rap Soul Podcast on all streaming platforms. You can follow us on social media, Rap Soul Podcast. We're on Twitter X, Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and the TikTok. We're a little bit of everywhere. Again, we're on YouTube. Download, subscribe there as well. If you want to contribute to us financially, hit us up on Cash App, $TWELVEKYLE. And don't forget the parent, the flagship station, if you will, the 12 Kyle Podcast. The 12 Kyle Podcast drops new episodes every Thursday at midnight. And from time to time, we drop bonus episodes on Sundays at midnight. Wherever you find the Rap Soul Podcast is where you can find the 12 Kyle Podcast. So tap in as well. Again, this has been another edition of the Rap Soul Podcast, where we talk about hip hop regions. Again, the Rap Soul Podcast is the intersection of conversation about rap, soul music, hip hop, and R&B from the 80s, 90s, and the 2000s. This is the best music podcast that you've ever heard. Again, I am your boy 12 Kyle. I'll catch you guys next time. 5 G's. Chia.
Thank you for listening. This concludes the episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Rap Soul Podcast. You can find the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Follow the podcast on social media. And feel free to continue this discussion on our Reddit page. More importantly, share this podcast with a friend or family member who loves music as much as you do. Until next time, 5,000.